From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is Here and Now. Robin is off today. Coming up, if you watched with glee as Donald Sterling was punished by the NBA for those racist comments caught on tape, did you worry that you could get in trouble for things you have said in private? We're going to look at what's legal when it comes to recording conversations and whether laws should be updated in the digital age. But first, what more could have been done to prevent Elliot Rodger from killing six people and himself on Friday in California? His family had called police to check up on him last month. They were concerned. He convinced police he was okay, and there was little they could do unless Rodger had been admitted to a psychiatric facility, which he hadn't. Now, shootings of this kind always reignite the debate about when mentally ill people should be committed against their will. But what else can be done? Let's bring in Richard Bonney, who's director of the Institute of Law, Psychiatry, and Public Policy at the University of Virginia. Professor, we now know that Elliot Rodger had lots of weapons in his room. What are your thoughts on the idea of temporarily seizing weapons from someone who is mentally ill?
So I think this is one tool that we really ought to be thinking about. The idea of enabling the police to temporarily seize weapons or remove weapons when there is demonstrably elevated risk of danger or a credible report from a family member that involves an elevated threat. There are a number of states that have laws of this type that basically enable the police to get a warrant in order to remove weapons under these circumstances, then keep them for a designated period of time with a due process hearing at some point around the question of whether they should be restored, you know, to the person. And obviously the focus then would be whether the risk that had been elevated, you know, had been reduced. So I think that is a very, very promising strategy. Indiana has a law of this kind. Connecticut also has a law of this kind. And I think recently Texas passed something, you know, that is analogous to this. So I think this is something potentially that could be very useful, particularly for family members who are, you know, quite often, you know, in the best position to know about this and to provide the evidence that would be necessary to support the warrant.
When something like this happens, and it does seem to happen week after week almost at this point, maybe not on this scale, but there is a mass shooting now, certainly once a month we have to cover something like this. Does it surprise you anymore as somebody who's researched this and spends your time looking into the causes of this kind of thing?
Well, you know, it's hard to put these terrible mass strategies in sort of a larger context. There are sort of daily concerns that people, you know, that families have to confront and communities have to confront with regard to violence and particularly suicide. And what we need is a strategy that reduces the risk of violence or suicide, you know, in all of these situations that families need to confront. And maybe that will also contribute to reducing the risk of these mass tragedies.
When you say reducing the risk, is that something that needs to be done vis-a-vis mental health?
So I think we need to have multiple tools and multiple strategies. People, you know, don't walk around, you know, with a label, you know, on their forehead or on their back saying, you know, mental illness or a particular diagnosis. I think what needs to be done is that we need to focus on conduct that demonstrates an elevated risk of violence and or suicide, and focus, you know, on those circumstances rather than thinking about this as a problem of mental illness. I mean, mental illness accounts for really only a small fraction of gun violence or violence in general. In many of these situations, people had not been diagnosed with a mental illness or had a history of hospitalization. You know, but under the circumstances, clearly there was an elevated risk, and quite often they had manifested it in their conduct by specific threats. In many cases, there's also substance abuse or alcohol that's involved in these situations as well. And so we need to look at the risk factors and think about how we can intervene when the risk is elevated, and authorizing the police to intervene, facilitating mental health intervention in many cases obviously would be important, but getting the weapon out of the hands of a person at elevated risk is a really promising strategy and something that we really need to be paying more attention to.
Richard Bonney is director of the Institute of Law, Psychiatry, and Public Policy at the University of Virginia. Professor Bonney, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, you're quite welcome.